You're listening to All The Best. I'm Samantha Groth. In this episode, we're looking for culture, so we'll be travelling across waters, out of theatres, and into the internet. In our first story, we find culture with the world's first super nanny. There's also some language that is...
It's unacceptable. I don't like it.
...in this one, so it might be worth listening after the kids have gone to bed.
I was brought up in country Queensland. To give you an idea of, like, how country I was brought up with a stepdad who would say things like, cover and struth. And his, like, kind of style of, like, living was to go camping for 5 weeks straight. With the concept of camping being, like, throwing a tarp over the rocks and calling the stars as our blanket, because, like, he was a poet and it's so amazing. This had also meant while other kids were experiencing the art and culture that was, like, performance art, we were busy tough muttering it and, like, avoiding cow patties. Anyway, fast forward, like, many years later to the lead-up of my 17th birthday, now living in Sydney, city slicker. I overheard on the TV that Mary Poppins was playing in Sydney, and I had to go. Being a country bumpkin, I'd never seen a musical even a play before. So, like, now was the time. It's gonna rule. I wanted to be like pretty cultured, kind of like a really good deli meat kind of culture. Anyway, so my parents picked up on this like super like really subtle vibe, and gifted me 2 tickets to go see the musical. And I was a little excited. But then to later find out that my, like, then-girlfriend wasn't able to take the night off work. And being not from the city, going from Manly to the city was a huge deal. It was like, what a trip. So we were a little bit bummed out, and I didn't want to go by myself. And my parents picked up on this very subtle vibe. And, like, the saints that they are bought me a second set of tickets, and I was so keen. Like, I was going to see my first ever musical, and it was going to be Mary Poppins. To make it even better, later that week, we found out that neither of us had to, like, work on the night, so we had 2 sets of tickets for 2 great nights at Mary Poppins. It was going to be awesome. Anyway, so the night came, and I was very rags-to-riches kind of night. I felt like Anne Hathaway in Princess Diaries. Or Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman. Or Kim Kardashian after that debut blockbuster that she did. We got all dressed up and dolled up, and we ferried over to the city from Manly, which for me at the time was an adventure in itself, like I said. We arrived at Capitol Theatre, which was, like, bustling with people in anticipation, and I was, like, getting so giddy. I was going to see my first musical. We get inside, and the lady, like, points us to our seat with her professional little light flasher thing. Now, like, what we had to do is just, like, maintain our really cool facade and wait patiently for the curtains to be drawn. The lights dim and the show begins. Anyway, sometimes later... The curtain closed and it was such a time and I felt on top of the world. There was music and there was dancing and I wanted to tell everybody to go see a musical. Anyway, we gathered our things and on our way out, like, navigated through the crowds and bumped through and pushed and got to the doors, and on our final goodbye, the lady on the doors is like, keep your tickets for re-entry. And I was like, what the fuck? No. There's way too many people in there. I'm not going back in. Whatever. So we sailed back over the ocean to Manly. Arrived back home to my sleepy stepmom, who groggily comes out and is like, how was your night? And I was like, it was freaking amazing. There was singing and there was dancing and there were spoonfuls of sugar. It was great. Everybody should go see musicals. But it ended, like, a little bit differently to the film. But I guess that's, like, creative freedom. So, like, anyway. She was like, oh, so glad you enjoyed it. Do you think you'll see it tomorrow? And I was like, super color friggin' heck yeah, I am. Anyway, the next day came, the height was less this time, because, you know, it wasn't my first musical rodeo. But nonetheless, it was still exciting. We get there amongst the crowd of fresh new faces beside ours. The lady at the door is probably like, back again, all right. Waited for the curtains to be drawn, and like the night before, there was singing and dancing and cheers and laughs and heartfelt moments. And the curtain closes and we have to come to the end of yet another great night of musicals. Man, and So yeah, we get ready to leave, and I notice that the night before, the place was still bustling with people. Nobody seemed too urgent to leave. Maybe it was like a Marvel movie, and there was like credit scenes. I don't know. Someone here was like, there's end credit scenes. So I felt like tonight would be a good night to follow the crowd and see what was going on. And then my then girlfriend comes back from the bathroom, and I've gathered our things to go. And I hear a tune over the speakers, and then the request for everybody to take their seats again. And I was like, what the fuck? What? What's going on? So I planted my 17-year-old self back down in my seats. I was like, what was happening? So much excitement, so much adrenaline. The lights started to dim and the curtains drawn again. There was a second half! No wonder the ending night was shit. Which now I can admit. Man, you thought the first half was powerful. You should have seen the second half. Who knew that there was two parts to musicals? Man. I guess a lot of people, but like, I'm from Queensland, whatever. The show went on and there was songs and dancing and laughing and cheers, but the cherry on the top, spoilers, if you didn't see the second half, they ended with Mary fucking Poppins flying over the crowd. Man, it was amazing. Anyway, so you may not know this, but someone who has been to like a musical and has experiences, stay for the second half, because there's a lot more where that came from, and people of the performing arts call that the intermission. So it's my tip.
That story was by Sapphire Sheedy, an animator and designer. It was performed at a bi-monthly storytelling night in Sydney, run by our mates, Read To Me. Look for them on Facebook to find out about upcoming events. The sound recordist was Zasha Rosen. Production assistance by Lindsay Riley. Loudest Cackle by Alison Chan.
You're listening to All The Best. I'm Samantha Groth. Do you want to join us in making a story? Well, All The Best is a show for new and emerging audio documentary makers to pitch, produce, and learn. Email us at contact@allthebestradio.com.
Despite what the government may tell you, Australia is made up of many different cultures. So producer Devana Senaniyaka finds out exactly where to find them.
When I arrived in Australia, I experienced a total culture shock. In Sri Lanka, I had a community from my family, cousins, school friends, family friends, and even neighbours. I never had to go about looking or finding a community. Over here, I realised I had no support circle to fall back on. I speak to three other immigrants, Sylvie Lieber, Hope Matambu, and Dali Say. Sylvie Lieber moved to Australia from France in 1952. She managed to set her roots in early.
Not long after we arrived, I went to a fabulous kindergarten called the Bialystok Centre Kindergarten. Bialystok was a Polish city, and a lot of the Jews from Bialystok had got together and got this beautiful old Victorian mansion. And one of the main things that happened there was the establishment of this Yiddish kindergarten. And I've got photos of the end of year concert. Even though there were boys and girls at the kinder, I was the handsome prince in the end of year concert because I had short hair and I was probably a good dancer. So I went to Jewish Sunday school, Yiddish Sunday school, I should say.
She'd also been introduced to socialism at a young age and found a strong sense of community there, so much so that the ideas exposed in the group influenced her throughout her life.
When I was about 8 years old, I was sent by my parents to this Jewish youth group called SCIF, which it means, I'll say it in Yiddish and then I'll translate, Sozialistische Kinderjugendverband, and that means the Socialist Children Youth Group. And that's a reflection of my father's family background. It was an organisation called the Jewish Labour Bund that had this youth group, SCIF. And I used to go every Sunday and we'd have summer camps and we'd have lots of fun. And I made really good friends there and maintained a lot of my Jewish culture through going to this Jewish youth group. We talked a lot about social justice issues, about what our families experienced during World War II. Socialism was very much part of it, but we saw it as, you know, equality between human beings. I'm still a social justice activist because of that experience.
On the other side of the world, Hope and her mother moved from South Africa to Australia. Through her family, she already had a social foundation. She just had to build on it.
New friends that we made were family friends through my mother, because there are actually a lot of South African and other Southern African black nurses who were sponsored in the same way that my mother was.
I realised the importance of community the first time I got sick and had to go to the doctor and fetch my meds all alone. Through several similar incidents, I learned that relationships are important because they counter loneliness, alienation and confusion in another country. Dalisi, another international student, had a similar feeling of disconnection. Born to a Filipino-Sri Lankan family, Dalisi spent her early years in Saudi Arabia. Right before her family moved to Australia, they lived in Malaysia for a short period. She talks about the contrast of her life in Australia and her life in Malaysia, particularly during the month of Ramadan.
After we did these prayers, we would just leave when we were living in Malaysia. And then I think someone in the mosque community basically noticed that my mom and I and my, you know, twin, we would all just leave without even, like, talking to anyone and stuff. And one day they just approached us and they were like, hey, do you guys want to have some dinner together? You know, we have all these noodles and rice and all these delicacies and desserts. They were like, oh, okay, yeah, we'll stay. And so when people actually make that effort to reach out to you and say, you know, we do have this dinner, we have this, you know, this practice that we'd like you to take part in, and they invited us over. It was really nice, and we actually made a couple of friends that way. I don't know how to explain it. Their inner circles are a little bit more gated, if I can use that word. So, for example, in Sri Lanka, I noticed that if a friend or a relative gets married, you would invite your workmates. I mean, we'd have, like, way more people personally invited. And I think it's because we're not as gated with our communities, like, with the people that we interact with. And so the intimacy is kind of, like, lended to more people in our lives. Whereas white people, those circles are a little bit more protected, and that intimacy is a lot more, like, you know, segmented.
As an international student, she found that she connected to other international students.
I looked for people who I felt comfortable with, and it just happened the people I was comfortable with were other international students who were sharing similar experiences of, you know, missing their families, missing back home, comparing things, and talking about their experiences as not just as new students to the university, which a lot of people would share, but also new people to the country. And we shared a lot of that. You know, as I got to know more people and I started frequenting other spaces on campus, I met other people of color on campus. A lot of people forget that people of color is such a wide term. Actually, when you say people of color, you're talking about 85% of the world.
While I was at university, I struggled to find a cohesive community. I tried to find a community based on location, one that was kind of rooted in university. Sylvie's experience of community is tied to location and place. She lovingly describes the Jewish communities in St Kilda and Carlton.
The go-to place for the Jewish community in the 50s in St Kilda was Ackland Street. And families would meet there on a Sunday afternoon usually. We were spoilt rotten with beautiful cake shops there. And I particularly used to look forward to these jam donuts, which we called ponchkes. And you can still get them there. And so I used to always have my ponchke when we went to Ackland Street. Also, I used to go sometimes with my mum. There used to be an indoor open area market with lots of food stalls, and it was called the Village Bell. And Mum used to get her bread there, her meat there, and it was also a bit of a meeting place for the Jewish community. Around the corner, there was the Palais Picture Theatre, where, of course, Saturday afternoons, the children would all go and see these fabulous movies, and yes, we did throw Jaffers down the aisles. There was also, on the upper esplanade, opposite the beach, the St. Moritz ice skating rink, and I used to go there every Saturday afternoon. And, of course, the fabulous beach in summer. I was there every day after school. I'd go to the beach, and there were so many Jews who used to go to the beach. So Carlton and St Kilda in the 50s and 60s were the centres for the Jewish community. It's no longer the case now. And opposite the Carlton Cemetery, there was a big building that's still there called the Kadima, and that was the centre of Yiddish culture in Melbourne. There used to be a lot of events there, theatre and performances and music.
Unlike Sylvie, I realised I could never find a community based on place. So I collected relationships through classes, clubs and societies, through friends of friends, through work. And this is the kind of uncohesive, disjointed community I've built. My sense of community is tied to people and is certainly not cohesive. It is built up of independent one-on-one friendships that I've then tied together in a haphazard way. Hope has another trick up her sleeve. She uses her interests to find like-minded people that are committed to the improvement of their communities. She then uses these foundations to connect to other people of the African diaspora.
The Victorian African Health Action Network, and this is a group that has been going, it's been around for many years, and we're a group of African health professionals. And I guess our main aim is to try and facilitate conversation around bloodborne virus and sexually transmissible infections. But I guess from an African perspective, and to sort of have something that advocates for the views of African Australians. So Africa on Screen is a not-for-profit organization that was founded by Clara Hodza and Bantu Zondani. And I helped them out last year. So last year, as part of, was it a part of Fringe Festival? I think it was. So their aim was to bring African Screen and share African stories from the screen with wider African Australian and wider Australian community. It really challenges people's ideas of what being African means and what African storytelling is. So I'm really proud of African cinema and that this group exists to try and bring African cinema to Australia.
One day, Hope tuned into a radio program and she found another opportunity for connection on the airwaves.
So I guess when I was in my mid-20s, I started to feel that something was lacking in the social groups that I had. Up until that point, you know, a lot of the socializing that I did was mostly with non-African and non-Black people, which is fine, but there were aspects of my identity and aspects of my taste in music or culture that weren't being met through the kinds of social groups that I had at that time. And I just decided to sort of change my life, I suppose. By chance, I happened to tune into PBS on a Sunday and found Flight 106.7 to Africa with Stanny Gomer. And this show was a revelation to me because it, you know, each week sometimes he visits a different country. It's a mix of traditional plus contemporary sort of African sounds.
Building my community, online spaces have become important. I have learned that connecting to people online helps tap into important conversations and radical ideas that may not be accessible through friends. I met Dalise on an online space that encouraged women, femmes and non-binary people of colour to have conversations about careers and employment. We found that we connected based on our connection to Sri Lanka, and we also had similar interests in beauty, social justice and immigration.
We would be socialising online and then one day decide, yeah, let's just hang out. Let's see what you're into. Do you want to go for brunch? and it'll be kind of nice. Do you want to go to this event together? And do you want to go to this talk?
I met Hope online too. She added me on Facebook. Then she and I organized a phone call and finally met in real life. Hope has mastered the art of building communities online.
Someone just mentioned an artist named Atonga Tem, and I was like, who is that? I have to find out about them. And went online, befriended her on Facebook. Luckily, she accepted me. I think we both share maybe a love and fascination with other Black people in terms of supporting them, seeing what they're up to. And I only met her a year after she had accepted my friend request on Facebook, which seems a bit creepy. But I think she can vouch for the fact that maybe I'm a decent person now. But it's just so wonderful to find all this stuff informally through volunteering or through groups, and to follow it up, to chase it. I mean, the end goal isn't necessarily to be friends one-on-one with a person, but to get their recommendations as well, because there's important conversations that are happening out there. And sometimes it's only certain groups of people that maybe know. So you have to find yourself, you have to find a way to immerse yourself into these worlds so you can be a part of these conversations and see what's happening.
Dalisi found that online communities help satisfy her cross-cultural identity and her very specific interests.
The thing about the internet is that you can find all kinds of things in all kinds of niche communities. So if I wanted to, you know, find out more information about beauty communities for particular people, I'd find it. If I wanted to have a sports and movement group that did not have weight loss as a goal, I could find that. And so I really enjoyed finding like these small communities. And after a certain point, I started creating them too. So I also created a fitness group. It was basically to focus mainly on movement, sports. You know, it also meant was I also had to challenge myself into the ways how I understood working out, the way how I understood fitness. I like it because we also get to celebrate achievements of, say, Serena Williams or a new coming, upcoming gymnast.
Hope adds to this.
Facebook, it's been really great to be part of specifically queer people of color online communities, because I guess, you know, in my late teens or early 20s, these were aspects of my own identity that I didn't really quite acknowledge, or I couldn't quite articulate. And I think that being part of these online communities has allowed me to access to kinds of language that has helped open up, you know, really articulate ideas and feelings. And so online communities are valuable for people of color and for young people specifically, because for a long time, you know, marginalized people, we were at the mercy of dominant societies in terms of how we were framed, in terms of language that was used to describe us. But now you're seeing a real shift in theories, in language, and that a lot of that work is being led by marginalized groups. And I think it's really important to have spaces where we can all come to support each other and work through things and redefine ourselves and reclaim ourselves. And I think that's very important.
I have built a sense of community through a series of temporary exchanges that have then grown into complex relationships through time spent together. I have found that to be in the middle of various cultures, to have a liminal identity, is far more common than I expected. The internet has redefined the act of community building and has helped me make valuable relationships through a simple tap on my phone. Online spaces have helped me learn about my identity, and they've become spaces not just for connection and friendship, but also for self-education and collective thinking, and therefore it really helps me feel like I'm part of a larger community. I'll also be moving around a lot, so I can also always return to online spaces to maintain my relationships. Unlike in the past, communities do not have to be linked to locations or to physical face-to-face meetings or even phone calls. They can be retained because relationships, connections, and intimacy can be easily tapped into and in a sense touched just through the phone. Thank you.
That story was by Devana Senanayake. Gregory J. Thorsby did the sound design. The supervising producers were Selena Shannon, Sarah Mashman, and Alison Chan. An additional thanks goes to Layla Caridi of Multicultural Arts Victoria and 3CR in Melbourne. This was the second story in Devana's three-part series on migration. Stay tuned for the third story, The Dream of Return, in an upcoming episode. This episode of All the Best was compiled and mixed by Alina Godwin. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Alison Chan. Our Victorian State Coordinator is Jordan Fennell. Our Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Erin Dick. Matilda Fay is our social media producer, and I'm Samantha Grove, your host. Shiny Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and find all of our other episodes at allthebestradio.com. We're also a podcast, so subscribe, get your culture on, and give us a review. Unless you're going to say it's
unacceptable. I don't like it.